from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We've got Coach Wunstead here in studio. And we said before the break we would talk a little bit about the defense. At this point, Dave, we've been mentioning it. They seem to have more members of the secondary than positions. They look really good on the back end. We know they've made some moves. They've got some new defensive linemen in here. And, of course, you look at the linebacking core, and you like what they have. They made some acquisitions last year. How good are they going to be on defense? And are we underselling the defense while talking about the quarterback and the skill position players?
Okay, come on, Dustin. I think we are a little bit, just because of how they ended up and how they performed last year under some very difficult situations. You know, the two things that showed up so far, number one, we got to go back to ground zero. And with this defensive philosophy that Flus has, the ideal situation would be for him to get enough pressure, enough sacks with rushing his four guys and be multiple from a coverage standpoint. That obviously is the foundation of what this defensive philosophy is. Now, the encouraging thing that I thought we saw, if we go back to last year, before Flus took over calling the defenses, we stayed with that philosophy even though we couldn't get any pressure. And if we all remember when, going back to when Flus took over, they were a bottom 10 in the NFL in pressures, and they ended up the season in a top 10 defense in the NFL in pressures. And that was after Flus started calling the defenses. Go back to that third preseason game when all the veterans were playing. It did not take them long when their backs were to the wall a little bit before all of a sudden we saw Blackwell, the nickelback, coming off the corner for a big sack or whatever. So that tells me that, sure, they'd like to be able to, hopefully the Booker kid comes along or some of these young guys develop, the new guy from Seattle, they can, some of these guys bring the pressure that they want. But if they don't, I guarantee you, Flus is sitting there saying, well, I know that we've had success with Brisker blitzing. We know we can bring Kyle Gordon. We know we can bring linebacker pressure. So, yes, I mean, if I'm on offense and getting ready for the Bears defense right now, you better prepare for pressures, because if they're not making it happen with four, I think it's a proven fact with success, and that's a key. They're not just doing it. They're doing it with success, that the pressure will be coming.
So if you're a defensive coordinator getting ready for the Bears offense and you're looking at a rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams, what conclusions, if any, have you been able to form after 43 preseason snaps in the way that you want to attack him, in the way that you think he can hurt you the most?
I think you got to keep him in the pocket. If you're pressuring him, particularly to his right side, you know, he's got the ability. We've seen him make throws to the right and left, but boy, whenever you're rushing him, I'm going to make sure that my left defensive end, or if I'm blitzing, my left outside blitzer, that he is keeping Caleb in the pocket, because the guy is really, really good when he's on the move outside the pocket making big throws. That would be the number one thing. It'll be curious to see, do they try and pressure him or do they try to cover him? You know, the old NFL way of doing it over the years is you pressure the young, inexperienced quarterbacks and you cover the experienced ones, the good ones. You know, you never blitzed Dan Marino as an example because the ball was coming out so quick, you're wasting your time. You know, you would pressure the young, inexperienced quarterbacks. Caleb falls into that category, but he's light years ahead of where a rookie quarterback would be from a mental approach, from football knowledge, in my opinion. So that's going to be the biggest thing I see, you know, is when they play Tennessee, does Tennessee feel that, one, do they feel they need to blitz because, you know, to get pressure against our offensive line, or – you know, will they just cover pressure? I mean, who knows? That's going to be the big thing, I think, that we have to keep an eye on in that opener.
Kind of fascinating to think that the league wanted to use a bona fide quarterback as a practice squatter that could then be active on game day, have a special designation, and the Players Association rejected it. So that's not going to happen this year. You are still allowed to move off the practice squad three times, but you won't be able to take a practice squad quarterback and put him on the active roster in case there's an injury to your first two guys. Will that encourage teams to keep more quiet? I guess the Players Association feels that a third quarterback would make close to $800,000 a year, and if you were a practice squatter, you make like $16,000 to $20,000 a month. So it would be a couple hundred thousand dollars basically instead of close to $1 million. And that's why they didn't approve that move. But, you know, would you think more teams are going to keep a third quarterback? And I don't think the Bears will, but I'm just curious, do you look around the league and think that was sort of the Players Association sort of wrecked what was going to be
right,
a way of keeping an extra quarterback.
Yeah, you know, and the owners have always fought the theory of just, well, let's just increase the roster size. You know, they because of the retirement and the benefit, everything that goes along with that. Right. So that didn't happen. I think last year, you know, over 50% of the quarterbacks in our league at some point or another, I know this, missed time, okay, because of injury. So that is a concern, but I think what you can do now, though, and I may be wrong, correct me, guys, on this rule, I think if you keep a third quarterback on the practice squad, so, okay, he's not on your active roster on game day, mm-hmm. but he is on your practice squad, you can move him up, right?
That's, on game day.
That was rejected by the NFLPA. That was the rule that was proposed. And then it turns out that the NFLPA rejected it for – so you can only move a guy up three times. So you can't have a third quarterback from the practice squad active on game day.
Yeah, unless
they tried to do that, but they shot it down.
You can move him up, I think, during the week. You know, like if you start off with the week and
three
say –
three times over the course of the season.
Right. So I think what they're looking at is, okay, if you get a – serious injury to your quarterback now you can move up that practice squad guy and now he is part of your 48 man roster on game day, so now he's eligible to play even though you're still going to only end up with two, you know, if providing that the starter is out and hurt. I kind of get it. You know, they're saying if the guy just gets nicked, that, hey, your backup's got to come in and finish the game. That's what they're saying. But if it's a long-term injury, you know, where he's going to be out 2 or 3 weeks, now you got to move a guy up under the roster.
So what about the Bears roster concerns you the most as you get to the nitty-gritty and you get 53 guys on it?
Yeah, probably the offensive line. You know, not probably. I would say the offensive line, just because of you know, we're still relatively young. We got a new offense, you know, which is going to mean some adjustments, obviously, on the move. But I would say the other thing, too, is, you know, just the availability of some of these guys to be able to count on them. You know, that Nate Davis makes me nervous. And I'm just looking at history. Now, I'm not looking at who's the best players. You know, he makes me nervous. Tevin Jenkins, who I love. He makes me nervous. You know, Braxton's banged up right now. I don't know. I mean, is Bates going to be the center or is Shelton going to be the center?
Shelton, apparently, because Bates has got a shoulder.
Yeah, so, okay, so there's Shelton who has done it. He'll be fine. I think I think he'll be better than what happened last year with Cody and the snaps and that whole mess. So, you know, how much did we really, really improve the offensive line over a year ago? I don't know. Maybe a little bit. You know, I think the Bears are probably counting on, okay, Darnell Wright, you're a year older. Braxton Jones, you're a year older. Everybody's matured a year, so that should constitute you being a better player, you know? So, but it makes me nervous. Boy, one or two injuries are
right.
And now everything could change in a hurry for our man Caleb, you know?
What do you think of him? We were talking about it. He's shown this star quality. He's got a little flash to him.
Yep.
I don't know if, you know, I think we're all very excited about the possibilities, but you just want to remember it's rookie quarterbacks. That's a long journey, and that's a path, and not everything comes easy and simply, and over the course of a season, it becomes very difficult.
Yeah, this guy, in my opinion, is light years. I mean, it was Troy Aikman's third year at Dallas when all of a sudden he started, you can notice that he really started getting it, mm-hmm. you know? And I know offenses were different then, but so I use him as the example because I think that Caleb is, for a rookie quarterback, he's just light years ahead of the mental part of getting it and what goes into it. And what I loved about him is the one game they were interviewing him afterwards and he was talking about why he made a certain throw and why he didn't, you know, dump the ball off. I saw him. I knew that if I threw the ball incomplete, it would be out of bounds. You know, in other words, I'm not going to throw an interception on that. God, that stuff is impressive. The thing that's going to happen, and I can tell you this, the thing that's going to happen is the speed of the game come 2 weeks from now is going to be a lot different for Caleb, okay? When it goes from preseason to regular season, we only got 17 weeks, right? And everybody right now, every team in the league is, in their minds, a playoff team, and they're going to get to the Super Bowl. That's just where – that's the – if you're not thinking it now, you might as well just go to the draft and get ready for next year. So everybody's enthused about their team right now, okay? And coaches, players, and rightfully so, fans. The speed of the game for Caleb, to me, that's going to be the one thing that's been different, you know, in the preseason as compared to the regular season.
So because of Hard Knocks, we're able to see things we wouldn't ordinarily see, such as Matt Eberflus spending individual time with his quarterback, which I think is a nice glimpse into his attempt to establish a good rapport and relationship with Caleb Williams. I don't know if that's common or uncommon, Dave. In your experience as a head coach, how important was it to you? You would be known as a defensive-minded head coach to establish that kind of relationship, to have a rapport, because you're not necessarily calling offensive plays, especially Flusie, he's calling defensive signals. Does that matter? Is that relevant in this relationship in this season?
Yes, I think it's I didn't do a good enough job of that. Okay, I wish I would have spent more time with the quarterback, and I didn't. I mean, because I was in every special teams meeting. I was a little bit obsessed with that. And then I was obviously in the defensive meetings, offensive meetings. But as far as the one-on-one time, I wish I would have spent more time with the quarterbacks. I really didn't. I like what Flus is doing. I think that's good, particularly with a rookie.
When we talk about the fact that they've improved the receiving core, you know, you look around the league now, we know Justin Jefferson got that massive contract, and now C.D. Lamb gets the big deal yesterday, and those are the two highest-paid players in the league outside of the quarterback. The Bears, now that you measure it, did pretty good getting D.J. Moore's deal done in the way that they did. It was a smart move to go to him early, and yep. You get the last 2 years, and now you got him for 4 years after that. You've kind of locked in at a good rate, a really good player. What does that say to you about the future of this team with the rookie quarterback, the rookie receiver, the receiver under contract, you know, kind of where they're at right now with that particular group.
If, you know, Caleb's everything that we think he is, you know, the Bears are going to be good for, I mean, the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, we should be knocking on the door, and it's going to be tough to make this team, you know, and Ryan Poles, the thing that he's doing, you know, we always thought when you had, you know, when we built that Super Bowl team at Dallas, you know, the whole focus was how can we improve the bottom 10 guys on our roster, you know? And it seems like that's where Ryan Poles is really looking now. How can we keep improving the depth and improving the bottom 10 guys? I think that's a situation they're going to be in here for a bunch of years. They've done a fantastic job. I mean, truly is. It's funny. You talked about a thought came to my mind, as it does, about talking to quarterbacks. Quarterbacks I had, I remember sitting when we signed Dave Craig. Remember?
Sure.
Dave Craig, I think, was older than I was. We sat in, I did talk to Dave Craig, but I think I was talking to him about the 68 Bart Starr quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
I mean,
contemporary.
He was older than I was, and that's where his mind, I mean, but anyway.
Where did he go to college? Like
Milton College.
Milton.
Milton College. Small college guy.
It's
definitely small
hands.
He's
a Wisconsin guy, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, he was the best.
Small hands.
Fantastic.
Great guy.
Special teams being as important as they are, our guy Biggsy tweets this out a few minutes ago. Nothing official, but keep an eye out for long snapper Patrick Scales to start the season on injured reserve. That would be a big...
You got to have a long snapper.
That would be a big setback, and I think a little thing that might mean a lot. You don't want it to, but as a former special teams coordinator, as a head coach who respects the value of every special team snap, how important of a deal is that?
Well, you know who it affects. They'll get a snapper to come in that'll be able to do it. Where's Patrick Manley? Come on, Pap. I'm going to start it right now. Let's start a room.
Wow. Come back.
And come back.
A decade later.
I saw him shoot about 72 at Beverly about 2 weeks ago. So he's in shape, trust me. But seriously, you know who it affects. The snappers are snappers. There's good guys out there who can get the ball back. Here's the thing. You got a guy who's holding for Santos?
Torrey Taylor, the punter.
Thank you. A rookie punter is your holder. And the real thing, yes, the timing of the kicker is good, but as far as the snap and spinning the ball and putting it down, the whole mechanics of the guy holding – the guy snapping, the guy kicking, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of confidence. I mean, that kicker, you know, he can't be worried about the ball, what time it's getting back there and the timing of it and how it's placed on the ground with the holder and where the laces are at. All those things, you cover all that stuff in the off season and training camp. So if he is, there is a little bit of an adjustment, particularly for a young, rookie punter that's worried about punting, and now he's got another responsibility with a different snapper.
Why are holders punters all the time? Why don't they put that job to a
better
roster?
Because during the week, they're gone.
I know.
It just
seems like a really big risk because punters aren't known to have great hands.
Yeah.
They got to catch
the ball. They do.
All right.
Don't be so down on punters.
I'm not down on punters.
It's the practice time, kind of like Mully said, where when everybody starts their individual, three kickers and the kickers and the snappers go on one field, right? And you don't want to have to be sending your backup quarterback
down
there.
When has anybody said, boy, that punter has great hands?
Every time there's a good hole and the wind's blowing and it's snowing, that's when you appreciate it.
Couple of those guys are renowned pickpockets. No, that's not true.
Oh, boy.
All right. Dave, great stuff. We got the college season starting this weekend.
Yes, yes.
And we got the Bears following next weekend. Do you have any college games that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, I'm going to start off Thursday with Rutgers, just to see. Because I think only for the fact that when you look at their schedule, I think this is a year for Rutgers football to make a move. They don't play Michigan. They don't play Ohio State. They don't play Oregon. Okay.
Wow.
So they don't play Penn State. So they have a real chance with a veteran team to make some noise. And then, you know, Penn State now, you know, they open up with West Virginia in Morgantown. That is going to be a good one for them coming right out of the block. So, yeah, it'll be.
What do you think of Notre Dame going to Texas A&M?
Tough place to play.
Yeah, it's. I don't know how good A&M is. They've been such a mess the last few years. But they have money down there. Yeah. And anytime you're getting players from the state of Texas are going to be good. And that place, you know, the 12th man down there, it's not an easy place to play. So Notre Dame, I'm anxious to see that quarterback from Notre Dame. What's his name? Riley
Leonard.
Yeah, Leonard.
Yep. Duke transfer.
Yeah, they said if he'd have been healthy that he could have been possibly a first-round pick. So, I mean, he's that type of player.
Yep.
So we'll see what he can do.
Good stuff, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, guys.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
That one trailed left field. Swanson unloads. Gone! Dansby Swanson, a grand slam, and the Cubs have opened it up here in Pittsburgh. It is 11-2.
Get that man a tomato sandwich.
Dansby goes deep, and the Cubs break it wide open.
Tomato sandwich, there you go. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. And we're delighted to welcome in Taylor McGregor. She joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Taylor does a great job on the Marquee Sports Network. They're fine reporter. And, man, they were running the bases yesterday, Taylor. How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it was really fun to see. I think they definitely saw something on the base pass that they were able to take advantage of. That it was great. It was an exciting game all around between the grand slam that you guys played and then all the running around the bases. It's kind of become this identity, especially with Pete Crow Armstrong at 8-9, and it was fun.
It is fun. Pete Crow Armstrong's had quite a week of fun. He had the inside the park homer in 14 seconds. And then he hit another long one in the second deck in Miami. Now 3 stolen bases last night. Taylor, everybody understands the effect he can have on the lineup. I'm curious, a rookie like that with his enthusiasm and personality, what effect does he have in the clubhouse?
You know, the way Pete Council describes Pete Crow Armstrong is he's sort of everybody's little brother. And he's so likable. I would say he's lovable. He's so lovable. Everybody really has just put their arm around him and embraced him on this team. And the cool thing about PCA is he has the humility to ask questions, even though his skill set is different than anybody else's on the team. But, you know, he wants to be a part of what everybody's doing, and he's still asking all these questions, how to get better. And I think we've seen that not only, you know, in his base running this year. He's always been a fast guy, but I think the work he put in the offseason to get really good at base running has showed. And then the offense, as of late, you know, Dansby Swanson said it postgame, he's been so impressed with the way that PCA has continued to ask all the right questions, to sit in on the hitters' meetings, and really be curious about what the other guys are doing. And I think it's paid dividends for what we've seen on the field as of late.
It was interesting that Craig Counsell was asked, when's he moving up to the top of the lineup? And how quickly will that happen? And he talked about speed being important but not essential. It's on base that matters most at the top of the lineup. And that, you know, he didn't reject the idea that eventually it would happen, but he also didn't kind of say we're moving him there next week.
Well, I think when you look around Major League Baseball, this is not just the Cubs, the trend around Major League Baseball, you put your best hitters at the top of the lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw Mike Trout hitting number 2, you know, and that was kind of everybody at first when that happened a couple of years ago was like, what's going on? But you realize those orders come, or those spots in the lineup come up the most. And so you want your best hitters to get the most plate appearances. And with all due respect to Pete, he's not the best hitter on the team yet. Mm-hmm. And so you have, like, with Ian Happ, the way he's been swinging it, and then you have some of the other really good hitters, Michael Bush at the top, those are the guys you want the most at bat. So that's the reasoning behind that. You know, the old school mentality and what Craig Counsell said is, everybody thinks, oh, the leadoff guy needs to get on and steal bases. Well, that's not really the way that the game's viewed anymore and what they believe is the best thing to help a team win. So that's the reasoning behind that. But look, I think the way that Pete is growing as a hitter, there will be a day when he is probably at the top of the lineup if he continues to progress offensively.
The other A at the bottom of the lineup, Miguel Amaya, has been a different catcher since July 3rd, since he dropped the leg kick for a toe tap. We know all about the mechanical difference that he changed that he made. I just wonder, do you think it's changed the way the Cubs view him long term? And how would you describe just his change, not only his effectiveness, but maybe his demeanor?
I don't know how it changed the way that you view the catching position moving forward, because I think anybody who's been around the game long enough knows that you always have to take into consideration sample size. And the reality is it's only been about a month and a half of this change. Is it sustainable? We don't know. The hope certainly is there. I would say with Miggy, I've noticed a little bit more confidence in him, and that comes with production. There's no doubt about it. But look, I think he deserves a ton of credit. And I asked Gansby this last night on our post-game show, how hard it is to make an adjustment like that at the major league level in the middle of the season. Like, we don't sometimes give players enough credit for doing these types of things. And for Miguel to take a couple days off, grind in the cage for those days to make this adjustment and then come back, see results, stick with it, while also, oh, by the way, still managing an entire major league pitching staff. Like, that's really hard to do. So I think if it's shown anything, it's just his mental fortitude for me. And not that they didn't already know that, but like, this is a tough kid who can handle a lot, which is really important for any catcher in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it was so much fun yesterday because everybody could run. It didn't matter. And I'm not going to sit here and go after Yasmani Grandal, but he was overmatched. And I mean, didn't Bellinger steal third at one point? It just felt like anybody on the base path was going to get an extra base.
Yeah, and look, credit to the Cubs for knowing that and exploiting that. And, that's what you have to do in this game. You have to know the tendencies of the other teams and be able to take advantage. And that's what I will say. When I was thinking about this last night, that's what I also love about all the new rule changes. Like, the action we're seeing on the base pass, it's so fun for the game. I thought last night, I mean, it was an explosion of offense, but like, that game early was really exciting because of all of the base stealing. And if I'm Major League Baseball, like, that's what I want if my product is excitement like that. So it's been, like, credit to the Cubs, but also it's been fun just around the game, the amount of base stealing we've seen.
Got to ask this, though, because it was no fun for the Pirates. I just wonder, on a night where your opponent scores 18 runs, was there anybody in the Pirate clubhouse or anything that you heard after the game where it was like, they stole eight bases, they scored 18 runs. What, did they really need to steal eight bases on us?
Well, I also think those eight bases came a majority early on in the game before the score had gotten totally lopsided.
Right,
because
right.
on our broadcast, we did talk about that. Like, if they try to score, or if they try to steal bases now, you think there's going to, you know, people are going to have some problems with that. And they didn't. So I think it was just the timing of the game. And, yeah, it just was what it was.
So, Taylor, you know, the problem with the Cubs, as we've discussed here on this show, is that for whatever reason, there are these offensive lapses. Certainly yesterday was fantastic, but they have struggled to put together kind of sweeps of opponents because they'll have a game where they're not scoring runs or where they will kind of be stymied a little bit in terms of their offense. Do they Do they have any deeper understanding of that? And listen, Paul Skeens is pitching on Wednesday. I don't expect them to get 18 on Wednesday, but it's great when you explode with all these runs. But, you know, you kind of wonder, can't you just hold back three of them or four of them for tomorrow?
Well, that's the problem with the hole that the Cubs have dug themselves in, right, is they force themselves to have to get sweeps in order to make up serious ground in the standings. And the reality with the way that Major League Baseball is constructed is sweeping teams is really, really hard, because usually you have to face an ace of the staff or, you know, one of their top pitchers during the course of a series. And I think that's what you've seen with some of these recent, you know, series, is they put together some really good games and then they face a really good pitcher, which happens. So, I said this last night, I thought the numbers in August have been encouraging slug-wise. They're fourth in baseball and slugging in the month of August, which was a problem early. So I think the offense has been doing its part as of late. But you sometimes got to give credit to the other pitching staff. And it's really, really hard to sweep teams in this game. And unfortunately, that's the position the Cubs have put themselves in. But it's also, you got to remember how good the other teams are too.
Taylor, was a surprise to hear that Drew Smyly was being released, or eventually that's where this is headed. I wonder what the players thought about that, if you got a sense of that post-game. We heard from Craig Counsell, but not much from Craig Counsell, because it didn't seem like he had much to offer. How would you describe the mood or the reaction to Drew Smyly being let go?
Yeah, so Craig had nothing official to say. I still have not been told officially. Drew was in the clubhouse last night, so there was no real reaction. I guess I'll keep you posted on that, so I don't really have anything to say there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've seen a couple of moves now in the bullpen, and I think it's just kind of what happens at the end of a season if it looks like you're not going to be able to make a run, right? So it's good to get to 500, but, you know, make it difficult for them to make a decision would be kind of the answer.
Yeah, and look, Jed's got to make decisions that are smart for not only right now, but for the future as well.
Right,
so
right.
I'm sure that's the focus.
So what is the overall mindset of the Cubs? Because one day they're in, the next day they're not. We have a daily referendum on whether or not the Cubs are going to be able to compete for the final wild card spot. It's like a division. There's like these four teams between the Cubs, or before you get to the third wild card spot, and the Cubs are in last place. Can they climb through the three other teams to get to that point? What is your sense, and how are the Cubs handling this day-to-day uncertainty?
I think the mindset is win today. You know, it can feel overwhelming, and you don't know what could happen if you start looking at the big picture. And so when I've asked guys about it, the only thing they say is we have to win today. And then you focus on winning tomorrow and then the day after that. But to get caught up in the big picture when you don't know what the other teams are going to do can get kind of silly, and, you know, can maybe get you in a space mentally that you don't want to be as a player. Now, us fans, that's what we do. But for the players, it's really just let's show up and win today and then win tomorrow and see where that takes us.
Great stuff. Taylor, thank you. Great catching up with you. Really appreciate you jumping on with us.
Thanks, Taylor.
Oh, of course. Of course. Talk to you guys later.
That is Taylor McGregor from the Marquee Network, and Jones today. Jared Jones going for Pittsburgh.
He's good.
Against Justin Steele. He's also good.
He's very good, too.
Hendricks against Paul Skeens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just saying, it's hard to steal eight bases if you can't get eight guys on base.
You better win today.
Yeah.
You better win today, because tomorrow seems like a mismatch.
Right. Even with Yasmani Grandal, if you can't get on
he's
base.
He's just a man, David. Okay? Just a man. He puts his pants on the same way
Paul
David.
Skeens?
Yeah. Okay. He's been touched this year.
Oh, we're going to get back to this.
He's been touched.
All right.
Okay.
I know he's just a man. He's a man who throws 100 miles per hour a lot.
He's a man. He's just a man.
So is PCA. He's just a man. Before you get too carried away there.
Well, maybe that talk about getting carried away. Maybe that prediction isn't so terrible now.
Oh, maybe it's still terrible.
I don't know how to love him.
Remember, Caleb wasn't part of the question.
Okay.
Well, my prediction is going to be PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong. So a Cubs outfielder will be the biggest star in Chicago by the year 2028.
Slow down.
Dustin's holding up his fingers with them crossed. He's got his legs crossed. He's got his eyes crossed. He's just hoping.
Gosh, 2028, that's so far away.
That's one good month will get you.
There you go. That's all it takes. Lead him off.
I do think he should be leading off.
I know you do. All right, we got Mike Florio. We're going to talk to Mike next. A lot of quarterback news in the NFL. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We
get
BB!
We
get
BB!
Boom,
BB! What's that? Gator!
Gator! NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mike Florio joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Mike, of course, we love our chance to talk to him, and we do so every week. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
We're living the dream, and, you know, we're looking at the C.D. Lamb signing, and we're kind of scratching our heads a little and wondering, if you're going to pay them all that, couldn't you have done that earlier? Why wait till there's only 13 days left before the start of the season?
Well, it is kind of stupid when you think of it that way. Look, every negotiation hinges on the two sides determining the deadline. And the deadline was clearly preparation for the regular season opener, not training camp. Why not make the deadline the start of training camp? Look at what the Vikings did with Justin Jefferson. The deadline was right before the mandatory minicamp. So he was there. He was present. He'll be ready. I don't like treating the deadline as the last week or so before it's time to play in a game that counts. There's a reason for training camp. There's value in being there. I think Jerry Jones did the math, crunched the numbers, and decided, you know what? We're going to get the deal done anyway. Let's get maximum exposure and interest and drama for a month as CeeDee Lamb's holdout becomes a huge story. And Jerry was stoking the fire from time to time to make it a bigger story. I think that given the way he's wired, basically he's a carnival barker, he likes the fact that it was hanging over the Cowboys because it allowed the Cowboys to take over the NFL news cycle for most of the month.
Mike, what do you think about the NFLPA pushing back and vetoing the rule that would have allowed quarterbacks essentially to be on the practice squad and elevated on game day as the emergency third quarterback? The decision to do that yesterday could affect how teams treat cuts today. What do you think?
Well, I mean, on one hand, it is a move that encourages player freedom, player movement. On the other hand, it can hurt teams because it makes it harder to have that third quarterback. And the union likes any rule that gives players flexibility. I just like to think that they would have used this as a way to negotiate. Let's get something done here. Let's give them something in return for getting them to agree to this. Everything is negotiable between the league and the union. And I wish the league cared about it enough. They would have given the union some concession to make it happen. And I don't fault the union just from the basic standpoint of collective bargaining. We hear that from the NFL. You know, with more and more states legalizing marijuana, the NFL still won't completely wipe it off the books because it's a matter of collective bargaining. If you want it out, you have to give us something. So that's what the union's doing here. If you want this rule, if you want this change to the status quo, you got to give us something. Well, we don't want to give you anything. Well, fine, then we're not going to let you do it. I mean, sometimes good ideas that could benefit people in a broad way get scrapped because of this notion of there has to be that back and forth on every issue, on every term they agree to.
I'm curious, Mike, do you believe that the NFL is going to approve this this selling of 10% of a franchise to a mutual fund or a specifically examined and approved kind of fund?
I think they're going to do this. Look, it's a vehicle for teams to take a little money off the table. And as the franchise values keep skyrocketing. We saw a record $4.65 billion 2 years ago this month for the Broncos when they were sold from Pat Bowlen's family to the Walmart conglomerate. Last year, a new record from $4.65 to $6.05 billion for the Commanders. The Cowboys reportedly worth more than $10 billion. I think you'd double that if they would ever be for sale. That's what someone would pay. So you can use those valuations to turn that into cash. There aren't a whole lot of people out there with the kind of money that can just write the check for that kind of an investment. And usually they want some voice. They want voting power. And most majority owners don't give that up. The one glitch will be having the right to buy back at a certain price. That's something that's come up lately. If they would change the rules later, there has to be a way to put the toothpaste back in the tube. You'd have to be able to buy the equity back from the private equity fund. So look, it introduces new decision makers, new dynamics. Who knows what that does by way of influencing owners? It could be good. It could be bad. But I just think it's generally not a good idea to have a bunch of multi-billion dollar organizations run like mom and pop shoe stores, which so many of the teams are. And I think the more you can have professionals and seasoned business executives involved, maybe some better decisions will be made by more teams.
Do you think that Jerry Jones is still making good decisions as an executive, as the general manager of the Dallas Cowboys? Or as he said yesterday, he defended himself in that role. But how much longer, Mike, is it realistic to expect him to do that role?
Your question implies that he ever did make good decisions as general manager. Because, look, everybody gives Jimmy Johnson the credit for building the team that won three Super Bowls in 4 years. That's one of the things that supposedly torments Jerry Jones. I've become a believer that Jerry Jones is just a hell of a salesman. He's a carnival barker. He's a huckster. And for him, success means keeping Cowboys in that America's team spotlight where every network wants their games. They make more money than anyone else. It doesn't matter if they don't have success on the field. And I like the fact that he's willing to dispense with this notion that the general manager and the coach run the show and the owner stays out of the way. A lot of the owners meddle. And he's at least owning the fact that he meddles. Now, maybe he's too cheap to hire a GM. Maybe it's as simple as, well, I'm going to make all these decisions anyway. Why do I need to pay somebody to have that title? And then I'll fire that guy and hire somebody else, and I'll still be the one making the decisions. And as long as the fans keep going to the games, keep buying the tickets, keep showing up, keep watching on TV, he'll keep doing it. Because you can't fire the owner. And if the owner's the GM, you can't fire the GM either.
Great stuff, Mike. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. Always fun to get a shot at conversation with him. We're going to bring in the ginger hair genius next. We're going to find out from Zach Zaidman if the Cubs did indeed save some runs for today and tomorrow.
And we have to bring him on because he announced his arrival and appointment on our show during the broadcast last night.
Listen, Zach says he's coming on. He's coming on.
He's coming on.
It's as simple as that. Yeah. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.